listen to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome back to episode 141 of Rogue Startups. Dave and I, we're on a roll, man, 2 weeks in a row. Normal time, normal day and everything. This is crazy, huh?
Woo, woo, woo!
We're
crazy in the house.
Desperately close to being serious podcasters here, so this is pretty scary.
That's as close as we're going to get until we attend the same MicroConf again, which hasn't happened in years.
Very likely will happen this year. I'm on the fence still, but I am. So MicroConf Europe is in Croatia. And I very much would like to go, but I also would very, very much like to go to MicroConf in Vegas, and I can't really justify both. So I probably am going to go skip Europe this year in Croatia, which is a shame, and come to Vegas next year in April. So we'll see.
Very nice. Well, if that goes down, then we will definitely have the MicroConf 2019 episode of Rogue Startups with two of us and one that actually knows what the hell that they're doing when they're using a podcasting rig. So that should probably help.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
So, I'm back in Orlando after traveling to see some family for the last week or so. I was out in Phoenix visiting my wife's 96-year-old grandfather, which is incredible and like a little eye-opening experience in and of itself. But I had a chance to get together with our friend Justin McGill. We grabbed a beer and chatted, business and life and stuff while I was there. So that was fun to get to meet up with, one of our friends in real life while traveling. So it was really kind of the highlight of that part of the trip for me, was getting to have a beer with Justin and kind of chat about a few things. So that's kind of that's the travel part of my update, I guess, since we talked last.
Very nice, very nice. Yeah, Justin's a good guy. I look forward to seeing him every year at MicroConf. If I ever end up going through Phoenix one of these days, I'll be sure to look him up. But he and Damien are fun guys to hang out with.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's interesting because he started with what LeadViews is now almost the same time we started what Podcast Motor is, and he's done a lot better than I have, but it's cool to be able to chat with them and hear that, they've tried a bunch of stuff. I mean, Damien talked about it when he was on the podcast. They tried a bunch of experiments and a bunch of stuff didn't work, and some stuff did work, and that's kind of how they are where they are today. But it's kind of cool to be able to talk to somebody who is at kind of a similar or started at a similar point to where I did and has tried a bunch of stuff, and some of it worked and some of it didn't, because it kind of puts in perspective, like, it's not just magic, like, you start at zero and get to whatever 100k MRI. I don't have any idea what they are, and it's all rainbows and unicorns. It's an up and down struggle and challenging and stuff, so it's always fun to talk to people that have actually been there kind of recently at a kind of relative level to where we are. So that was kind of nice.
Yeah, I get into conversations with other folks, especially ones that are farther ahead than I am, and they always come back and tell me sort of a same kind of theme. It's about speed of execution and trying different things and running experiments. The more stuff you can throw out there, the faster you find out whether it sticks and the sooner you get growth to come out of it. Which, I just have not been executing as fast as everybody would like. When I talk about those things with other people, they're like, you should be running more. I'm like, I'm running as fast as I can. It's just, distraction.
Yeah.
Distraction from the plugins. And I've even, put them in the back burner at this point. But, there's been like personal family stuff going on this summer, and that's just never going to go away. I'm not sidelining my family, so...
Yeah.
That is the point of this whole venture, so I do need to pay attention to that. But, when shit's going down with your family, then you are naturally not going to have as much bandwidth to put on the business. So, it is what it is.
Yeah, and I think that's like the real beauty of what we do, is the ability to put the business on hold when your family needs your time and attention. And if you choose not to do that, then all the risk that we all take with owning your own business and location independence and all this kind of stuff is all for naught if you can't focus on what's really important. I mean, the business is all important and stuff, but at the end of the day, it doesn't mean anything I think probably for Dave, for you and I, it's like a vehicle to get us to where we want with the rest of our lives.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, absolutely. Cool.
So what's been going on with you lately, Mr. Hewitt?
Yeah, so you know, talking about experiments, so we rolled out our new YouTube republishing feature a couple of weeks ago. I think I touched on it briefly in our last episode. So you know, now every time, if you're on kind of this new pricing plan with Castos, every time you publish a podcast episode, it gets converted to video, and we push it to a YouTube channel for you. And so this introduced pricing, really pricing tiers and plans for us. And so that's been interesting to see the adoption of, and it's going pretty well. One of the things we did is we have annual pricing by default on our pricing page. We have a little toggle where you can toggle to monthly, but it's been successful so far. I think we're getting a higher percentage of annual plans coming through, which is really cool for cash flow. And we're just starting to see those convert now. It's about 2 weeks later because of a 2-week trial. But it's nice to see, you know, rolling out multiple plans and annual as the default, where someone can obviously pick to pay monthly. But it's cool to see that that's making a difference. You know, talking about the experiments and stuff. This is the first real pricing experiment we've done, other than raising our prices about 2.5 months ago, which was not an entire success. Overall, our growth actually slowed a little bit from our price change. But now, with showing annual pricing as the default, our kind of new trial rate has gone up, and our conversions are about the same. So for anyone who hasn't done it, it's a really easy thing to do, even technically with pricing stuff in Stripe. It's not super complicated, and has been kind of a nice thing to see, kind of a decent win for us. So yeah, that's been cool, and we are embarking on, you know, a couple new features with Castos now. Yeah, in terms of development, one thing we learned, Dave, you can appreciate this, with rolling this big feature out, and it's kind of a new rule that we have. And actually, when Justin and I were having a beer in Phoenix, we both said this about the same time, which was, anytime you release a new feature, plan on doing nothing for the next like 2 to 4 weeks in terms of development. Because I mean, we roll this out, and I'm already like, okay, guys, next we're gonna go do our Spotify integration. Next we're gonna go do the this thing and the that thing, and like literally the day after, I had to pull the developer that did all the YouTube stuff and say, hey man, I'm sorry, I know you started on this other thing already, come back over here. This is broken and we need an option for people to do this and all this kind of stuff. So our new rule is, after you release a big feature, the next 2 weeks is totally unplanned. It is planned for supporting the new feature and improving onboarding and UI and stuff. So
yeah, I mean, whether if you just run through that cycle enough times, eventually it beats that lesson into your head. Like every single time I've pushed a major release of the plugins out the door or done some big stuff with Recapture, the next brief time period, whether, you know, 2 to 4 weeks for the plugins, maybe a couple of weeks for Recapture, is exactly what you just described. It's triaging, bug fixing, polishing, lipstick on the pig, you know, it's all the stuff that you missed in your testing and your development, and there's just no avoiding it.
Yeah. And I am very much the, like, let's get this out the door when it's pretty much ready. Because otherwise you don't know. Like, there are some things about our YouTube republishing feature that I still don't think are perfect, but we've gotten no negative feedback from customers on. But we have gotten feedback on other things. And so I think it's kind of like, I don't want to say like an MVP of a feature, but roll the feature out when it's pretty much done, get real feedback from users, and we soft launched it too. So it was live and available for about a week before we emailed people about it. But it all goes to like, get it out there, get real experience, even on a feature level, not just a whole new product, because stuff is going to happen, and a lot of stuff you don't anticipate. So that's been kind of my lesson in the last month or so, is just rolling a new feature out is complicated. It's totally different than launching a new product from scratch.
Amen to that one.
Yeah. How about you? What's new?
Well, it's been a lot of little things. So the freelancing work has actually been more intense lately. And as a result, I haven't had like extra time to work on things during the day. So I had to sit down with my wife and say, all right, I want to do some repositioning here for recapture. But in order for me to do that, I need to have this thing baked so that when I launch, I can say this message. And, you know, I said, I'm not getting this done during the day. So I need evenings and weekends, and basically I'm going to eat into family time for this. Because she was basically asking me, so how are things going with the business? Mm-hmm. And, you know, she checks in with me every now and then on that, because I don't always, you know, give her a blow-by-blow unless something big happens that was noteworthy. Because a lot of it's just little piddly stuff that's going on a day-to-day. Hey, we lost somebody. Hey, we gained two more, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not super exciting stuff to talk about, you know. Oh, hey, we fixed a bug today.
Right.
She's just like, yawner, Dave, thanks. So when we sat down and had that conversation, I was like, all right, well, this is what I need to do to move the needle. And then after I get this, I want to do a big sales push, which I'm prepping for as well. And in anticipation of Black Friday and getting people, you know, lined up and the fact that everybody's last minute, but if I can start hammering that message out there now, when it does get to be last minute, I can be more or less top of the mind when that happens. So, it's putting a lot of moving parts in place, spending some time, like, researching ways to get lists of people that are in a certain segment of the Magento and the Shopify markets, using some tools out there, which are, whew, a little spendy. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I'm getting some good results, so I can't complain. It's just, a lot of work. What else am I working on? Yeah, I mean, I think that's most of it. Oh, I've been spending a lot of time. So one of the agencies that wants me to pitch my product to them and to their customers, they've got a number of customers. One of the things that they said, in order for us to do a partnership with you, we need a screencast walkthrough. And I was like, oh, yeah, I can do that. No problem. And I'm thinking to myself, I got an hour and I'm done with this thing. It took me an hour just to write the script as to what to say and then edit it and then decide what my visuals are and then practice it a few times. And, you know, I'm way more than an hour into it at this point.
Yeah.
I spent 2 hours on it last night just rearranging the visuals and recording it because I had to go through it several times because every time I made a mistake, I'm like, whoop, okay, we're starting over. Mm-hmm. And it's like a 5-minute exposition that I'm doing. So it takes a little while to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, after getting that all together, I still didn't get all the visuals done. There were some issues that I ran into and random bugs, and I'm like, damn it. All right, I got to get that fixed. So trying to put all that together and record little mini screencasts and then put them into a bigger screencast. I mean, when this is all done, this is great. I'm actually going to make it part of a new onboarding sequence. I don't know if you saw this recently. Are you on Dan Martell's email list?
Yeah, but I don't read many of them. Yeah.
You don't read? Yeah. To be honest, I've been skipping a lot of them. But there was one that popped into my inbox last week, and it had to do with the 7 SaaS onboarding emails you should be sending. Mm. And if you're not sending these, you're wasting your time. Because he's talking about the dreaded, your trial is about to expire email, and why mm-hmm. that's just so uncompelling. And I was like, I'm doing that. I'm doing exactly what he's saying. And I realized I could do better. I definitely could do better. And now that he's laid out what his emails are, I realized like 3 or 4 of them I already had. A couple of them I didn't though. And so one of them would be like an overview of the application. So this thing that I'm building for the agency immediately becomes relevant because now I can send that out as like email number 2 mm-hmm. and say, mm-hmm. hey, if you're lost, here's a general walkthrough of what the application can do for you to give you some ideas of things you might want to focus on. And, you know, that was good. It's not the top thing I need to be working on right now. That's sales. But it was one of those things I'm like, shit, I got to add that to my to-do list because that's pretty important. And, I feel like my onboarding sequence is good, but it could always be a little bit stronger, right?
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. What's your trial to paid conversion ratio?
Oh, God, I haven't even measured that in the last 6 months. I don't even remember.
You don't know? You don't have ProfitWell or anything hooked up?
I do. I actually don't remember off the top of my head.
Okay.
I haven't looked in ProfitWell to find out what my trial to paid is. I'm usually looking at MRR and churn in there. and less about that. But I'm sure, well, if you give me a sec here, I can probably pull it up live.
No, so the reason I ask is I look at four or five things for my metrics. One is growth and like the other, that top line vanity metric. The other is new trials, churn, and conversion ratio. So the four things I look at really. And like new trials started and conversion ratio should equal like growth. And then churn is kind of like the health of the business. And I look at all of those to say, like, where do I need to spend my time? Do I need to spend it on churn? Do I need to spend it on conversion ratio? Because ours dropped from, like, 50% to 35% at a time. Now it's back up to, like, 50%. So I call that, like, good enough. So now, and churn is solid. So now I'm just saying, like, it's all top of funnel, increasing the number of new trials.
Gotcha. So you've got your funnel dialed in. Now, I just realized, I was like, why don't I know this number off the top of my head? And now I remember why I realized I don't know this number off the top of my head. So I'm digging around in ProfitWell, and I'm looking at my trials overview. I have no trials in there. And that's total bullshit, because I know that I have a bunch of people in trials. So there was something about how trials get identified in my Stripe, and it's not in the metadata. So now ProfitWell's not picking it up.
Gotcha.
And okay. Again, it was one of those things that was on my list, and until just now, I completely forgot about it. So now I'm going to add that to my fucking to-do list again.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Appreciate that. No, I mean, it's important to know that, and I've manually calculated it like two or three times since I've owned Recapture, and I keep saying to myself, yeah, I got to do this, but I, you know, it's a thousand other things that suddenly come up, and it's just not the most important thing. But you're absolutely right. Dialing in your funnel like this, super important. And the fact that I don't know this off the top of my head is making me more anxious, because I don't know if this is like where I should be spending my time. So now I've got to go calculate it, and I'll tell you next week.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe. No, and that's exactly, I mean, that's like all these numbers are just an indication of where the low-hanging fruit is, I think, in your in anybody's business, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's how I look at it. I just say, like, number of new trials should be over X, just kind of as our low watermark. Churn should be less than whatever. For us, it's like 5%, so that's great. I'm not going to worry about it until it gets significantly above that. And then conversion ratio, if you're asking for credit card up front, more than or around 50%. If it's less than that, work on the conversion ratio. Otherwise, it's all top of funnel for us. Just more people and more new trials started. So one we should probably say, like, unique website visitors per month is the other one I definitely don't track and should, because it's just not in ProfitWell. But then, like, your new person to the website to trial ratio should come into effect. But anyways, total
yeah,
tangent.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem with having all these different tools. You know, you got a little bit of stuff in Google Analytics, and you got a little bit of stuff in ProfitWell, and maybe you've got some. I have a personal dashboard, because neither of those tools tells me certain things about my customers. Like, we have some engagement metrics that talk about how much they're doing stuff inside of the app, so I can run reports to say, who's got this feature turned on? Who's got this feature turned on? And I can look to see how they do relative to other people. And pulling that all together into, like, one dashboard would be really helpful and awesome, but it's also not one of those things that's like, I'm going to die if I don't get this done. Cause I'm not, I'm just annoyed that I have to go tracking all this stuff down, and I can't just look in one place and say, hey, look, everything's good. Or, hey, look, I really need to be working on X.
Mm-hmm.
So,
So aside from our tangent, I think this week we're going to be talking about positioning. And this is an article from growandconvert.com. Their blog is fantastic. And this article, I love, Dave, you sent it to me, gosh, a month ago maybe. But it really strikes home, because it talks about positioning being the market fit part of product market fit. We all think that, like, product market fit is all about the product, but the ability for you to sell and really, like, ultimately, like, your product being successful, a lot more is about positioning and marketing and identifying and solving the problems that your customers have. And I think this article is really good, because it walks through, you know, at first it kind of, like, identifies the problem that probably all of us run into, whether we're developers or not, which is that the problem with your product is not that the features don't exist. It's that your marketing sucks, right?
Yes. And in fact, this was the reason that I sent this article to you, is that when I was looking at the the pivoting within Recapture, I was like, my positioning is part of the problem here. The fact that I look like every other email marketing solution out there and don't have a clear USP that I can really point to and say, this is why you want to run me. That's what got me thinking about all of this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we are 100% in the same boat with SalesCamp. I mean, I know I don't talk about it as much, but it's honestly because it's just we're not there yet. You know, the product is really just getting there. And I think I'm honest with myself if I say, like, in terms of products, we're just where we need to be in terms of feature. But our positioning and our messaging and our marketing are just not lining up yet. And I haven't had a ton of time to spend on it. But this article is a really good, like, reference and example for, like, how to identify all of these things, I think, and then how to implement them. And has a ton of really good examples in here.
Right. And the thing that I like about this is that the parts that we've talked about, when we've touched on these various things in other podcast episodes, but when something can kind of bring it all under one umbrella and say, this is why you're struggling to sell your product, or this is why you don't have product market fit, or this is how you can test to see if you have product market fit. Like, do you have all of these things? And if you don't have all of these things, you probably don't have product market fit. And we've always, you know, sort of say, hey, you're looking for product market fit. You got to get product market fit. Hey, how's your product market fit? Right?
Yeah.
And we've touched on that, but we've never said, okay, here's the checklist for product market fit. 1, 2, 3, 4. You got them? No? Okay, you don't have product market fit.
Right.
And, you know, checklists like that, I am very much a listicle kind of guy. I don't know about you, but I love lists. So I can go through and look and see, are these criteria here, yes or no? And then, it, you know, it gives me something actionable, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people know when they do have product market fit. But if they don't, the helpful thing about this, for me, again, is trying to help me identify where we're coming up short. And like you said, he has five real criteria, four or five criteria in here for like asking yourself a bunch of questions about your audience and your messaging and how all of that ties back together with your kind of USP and talking to your customers. And the first one is, who are you targeting? And so, I mean, the example that he has here is Drift versus Intercom, where they ask kind of like the, are you being really specific about who you're talking to, or are you being really broad? And I think kind of bringing it a little more to the world that maybe we know better is a lot of people drew this analogy with Drip and ConvertKit previously, and ConvertKit being really focused on email marketing for bloggers or content creators, and Drip being more of a general email marketing or marketing automation tool. I don't think there's a right or wrong with this, but you got to know whether you're being really specific or really broad in how you talk to your potential customers, and making sure that like the messaging on your site kind of goes along with that, and that like all of that lines up with your tool and what it can do, right?
Absolutely. And in fact, I would say that it, wide versus narrow is not a it's not a binary choice. I think that you should start out more narrow because you need to have a very specific person to talk to, and we'll get to that in one of the other pain points, one of the other points here, which is about the pain points. And there's very specific things about pain points, because again, we've touched on this in other podcasts, but there's some very important questions here to figure that out. But I think starting out narrow and then really nailing that market, and then you can broaden it to a wider market. That's exactly what Drip did when it went out. That's exactly what ConvertKit did when it went out. And then as they got bigger, you can't stick with that narrow niche. You have to widen it into a bigger market. And that's exactly what the other example in the article says about Intercom.
Mm-hmm.
Intercom, I don't know if you remember Intercom's initial thing years ago. It was about, you know, have one-on-one conversations with your customers. And it was really like a support thing. You know, there was live support chat. And as Intercom grew, they realized this is so much bigger than support chat.
Yeah.
And that's how they split it up into a wide thing. Hey, look at all the cool things that Intercom can do, because they didn't have that messaging. And then as people were going along saying, oh, I wish Intercom did this, it does. It's just you have to integrate it a little bit differently and use it this way. But it definitely solves the same thing. Customer.io, same problem.
Yeah.
They had the exact same thing. You had to start narrow and work your way into a wider market. So I think if you're starting wide, that's a red flag right there. That tells you maybe you don't have your market nailed. Maybe you don't really understand the people. Maybe you don't understand the pain points. Maybe you're not unique enough. Those are other things that deal with your product market fit here.
Yeah.
So yeah, those are all things that come along with it.
Yeah.
So that takes us to number two here, which is what pain points are you solving? And again, we've talked about this before. The question is, once you figure out who you're targeting, you kind of have to really deeply understand what is it that really frustrates them. And this is the part that I think we as developer entrepreneurs will immediately take a leap and say, oh, I know what they're frustrated about. They're frustrated about this because I'm frustrated about this. Therefore, they must be frustrated about this too. And that's the biggest line of horseshit that we can sell ourselves.
Right, right.
That's the one that doesn't work. You have to find out what they're really frustrated about. Because one of the two problems that can happen if you don't understand their pain points is you get the pain point wrong and you'll build it for pain point X, but the users are trying to solve pain point Y. Mm-hmm. So like something I just discovered the other day about recapture was what was one of the biggest problems of email marketing, and I thought it was something totally different. And then this guy in this agency I was talking to said, yeah, you know, the thing that they hate the most is managing all the content for all the different campaigns. Like there's no templating, there's no auto-updating, there's no I can take my text and broadcast it across all the campaigns. I have to go into each individual email and update it. Every fucking email tool has this problem. Every email tool, ConvertKit, Drip, MailChimp, Infusionsoft, I don't care who it is, they have this problem. None of them are paying attention to that problem. And that was something I got from a customer interview. They're like, yeah, when we're trying to manage a bunch of campaigns, like if we have a bunch of holiday things going on, especially between Black Friday and Christmas, we want to update a coupon code. Oh my God, that's like 29 edits.
Right. Right, right, right.
And I'm like, wow, I didn't really think about that. But you're right. It would be 29 edits, and that would suck. That would suck in a big way.
Huh, that's interesting.
So that's something, you know, email marketing tools are getting the pain point wrong right now because that's not what the customers are struggling with.
Yeah, and I would add to this, I think that it's important to know what the actual pain points for your customers are, and you should focus on one of them. Because I think that's where a lot of us fall down. A lot of us, we're all left brain, right? So we all say, oh, our thing can do this, and it can do this, and it can solve this, and it can solve that. But if you'd say, I'm going to talk to this one person about this one thing and tell them how I can solve the one thing really well, then when someone lands on your site, they're going to be like, holy shit, this is the app that can do this for me. But if you say, I can do this and this and this and this, someone lands on your site and they're going to say, that looks confusing. So I think as much as we can say, like, I'm the email marketing software for small e-commerce stores to make your workflow easier. Great. You know, super specific and really kind of limited in scope, but that's really helpful, right?
Yes. And most importantly, when you find that one pain point that is definitely one that they're talking about and is definitely something that your tool can solve – now, this is where you get your positioning from. This becomes the pain point you can emphasize because that's what's at top of the mind of your customers, and that's what they care about and why they would use your tool over all of your competitors right there.
Yeah, yep, yeah. Yep. And I think once we've nailed this down, then it comes to proposing your value in a unique way. And this is harder and harder all the time, right? Because like everybody sounds kind of similar in all of our markets, but if you can have a little spin on how you do something or who you're talking to or how you deliver that, I think that's really where you stand out and get like really strong, you know, brand ambassadors and really high like customer loyalty is if you can kind of be a little quirky or like Leanna Patch, right? She's a little funny in her copy and stuff like that. Like these are really, opinions that you have to take about yourself and your copy and your positioning that will turn some people off, but for everyone else it'll like create that really strong bond.
Yeah, and that brings us to point number three, which is if you've got a focus on a particular customer and you really understand who that is and you understand whatever pain point is most important to them and you can solve that, then you need to differentiate yourself from everybody else that's out there with something unique. It might be the way you solve it. It might be your UX. It might be your funny copy. It might be the fact that you send out little hats that are made to look like a monkey. You know, I mean, MailChimp used humor to differentiate themselves early on from the other ones that were out there, like Infusionsoft and the other stodgy email marketing companies that existed. You have to find that thing that makes you different than everybody else. And it doesn't have to be like wildly different. You know, you don't have to be like, you don't have to be the Andy Warhol of your market, because that's hard.
Right.
Also, I'm not a huge Andy Warhol fan. Those Campbell soup paintings give me a headache. But that aside, you know, you can just be quirky. You can be different. You can be something that has to be memorable, because if you're not memorable, people are going to take a quick look at you and then smear you in their brain with everybody else, and they're never coming back.
Yeah.
They're just – they have no way to remember you, right?
Yep. Yeah, and I think, you know, so if we assume we can get all of these down, then the fourth part that they talk about is really delivering the value to those leads or prospective new customers. So – and this really comes down to two things, and I would maybe add one more in here that we haven't experimented with at Castus yet, but we're going to soon. So one is – low churn. So if you have low churn, then your product solves the problem that you told your customers it would solve in a good way and is easy to use. And then that they refer their friends. So I think if you're getting these two things, people are happy with your app and they're telling their friends or colleagues about it and they're sticking around for a while, that's good. And the way that I think you can kind of quantify this a little bit, that maybe the one I would add, is like using something like NPS score, which we haven't done yet, but I would like to soon, to get like a real number around like how likely are you to recommend whatever app to your friends. So if you're running those NPS surveys, I think this gives you a quantitative point of like, how well are we doing? And then you can ask some open-ended questions to get some softer points around that. But I would say if your customers are happy, they'll score obviously well on NPS, and they should be referring their friends over, and they should be not churning. So
all of those are definitely true. I would go a little bit further on the last aspect of this, the fourth point. It's all about really proving it. And so there's lots of different ways that you can prove it. So like with recapture, I can smack somebody with emails on a constant basis saying, you paid us this much, we made you 20 times that amount. And I can put it in plain numbers, black and white, and I can point them back to cart feeds and email reports and stuff like that. So they can see, here are the customers on your site, here's what they did, here's how many we added, this is how much more you're making because you're using us. I mean, that's like the most compelling proof you can possibly offer. But it's not the only kind of proof you can offer. For example, and this is something that was in one of the emails that Dan Martell had mentioned, and I knew I had this, I just didn't put it together and think, hey, maybe I should actually send this out. But using case studies. So now you've got some proof. You can actually have a customer that went through a series of things on your site, got some great results from your tool, get permission from them. You can give them a little something, maybe a month free, maybe a discount, whatever, it doesn't matter. And then get a case study from them that you can publish. And then that published case study now becomes additional proof. So you can send it as part of your welcome series in your SaaS onboarding emails. You know, you can point to it when you're doing ad campaigns on Facebook to say, recapture boosts revenue 15%. See case study from blah, blah customer. You know, we've got ones from Wicker Central and Evil Controllers and something else. And I'm not using them to the fullest. And that Dan Martell thing sort of goosed me thinking that, ah, I really should be doing that. I have this information and I'm not using it. Dave, yep. You suck.
And I think that the white papers or the case studies are really most valuable the more you get into the B2B space, the more kind of true B2B on that spectrum you get. People are going to be looking for social proof from other businesses that have been doing what they want to do with your app. So if you can say, okay, this type of business running on this platform is using recapture and they saw returns of X, then someone that comes in, that's like what they need to say, okay, my business can do the same thing too. So I think especially when you get more B2B, that becomes more valuable.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you could do, you don't even have to get case studies. Maybe you're not at a point where you have enough customers to do a case study, but your product solves something that's pretty complex. Do a how-to, like show via screencast or a blog article or something that is very clear, step-by-step, that shows how you make complex things simple.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of stuff gets really compelling. You know, things like that, if it's the right market, it's the right timing, you can actually go viral on stuff like that because people are looking for those solutions. Now, I mean, you can't make it like every other how-to blog post that's out there because most of them kind of suck. So you've really got to go above and beyond to make your content compelling and useful and easy to consume. That's why I threw the word screencast in there because I'm getting totally down with screencasts these days.
There you go.
Yeah.
All this podcasting is going to do wonders for you in making those easier to do, I'm sure.
You know, despite the fact that we've been podcasting for almost 3 years at this point, I'm embarrassed to say how many times I had to record the thing last night because I hated the intonation or, you know, and it's 5 minutes of just yakking and then I have to like put specific pauses in there so there's transitions in the screencast. Oh my God, it was so much harder than extemporaneous talking.
It's tough. It's tough. Yeah, I mean, so we tell our podcast customers the hardest thing is just you talking. That's why a guest or a co-host is so much easier. Anyways, we digress. So the last part in here I think they talk about, which is really like the rubber meeting the road, is messaging versus positioning. And do those things line up and do they make sense to your customers? So you know who you're talking to and what you're talking about and how to make it unique and what your kind of unique selling proposition is. And can you relay that on your website quickly and concisely and in a way that makes people take action? And I mean, I think this is probably for most of us not the hardest part, but maybe if you think you have all of the other ones, this is the place to look. I mean, I think most of us know that copy is really important because it's the only chance we get to communicate with our customers, really. But if you've gone through all the other steps of identifying kind of the first three or four points that we talked about and you still don't feel like you have product market fit or your app's not growing, then looking at your copy and how your kind of new trial flow is set up and all that kind of stuff is worth looking at to say like, okay, I'm talking to the right person in the right way about the right thing, but this is still not working. Then looking at your site and your marketing on the site is probably the place to look to wrap up kind of getting this elusive product market fit.
Yeah, and the thing, and we're going to link to this in the show notes, so don't panic if you're wondering where the heck this article is coming from, but the thing that I like about the messaging is that all these four points that we've talked about are basically come down to here's a checklist to make sure that your messaging is on point. Because if you're not talking about these four things in your messaging doesn't back up the whole position that you are putting yourself in the market. So if your messaging doesn't say, we want these super specific customers and we help solve this critical pain point and we are unique in this special way and we have the proof to back it up, if you don't have those four things in your messaging is off and that's not going to communicate your position in the market in a clear way to get customers. And this was another one of those things that looking at recapture, I found gaps. You know, It tried originally to just be a Magento-only solution. Now I've got Shopify in there as well. So that kind of muddles my messaging about, you know, how specific my customers are. So as part of that, I actually installed WriteMessage recently on Recapture, and I'm still configuring it. But it now is asking questions when people pop up to say, hey, are you Magento or Shopify? Hey, are you an agency owner? Are you a store? Are you run an agency or do you have your own store? So I can make that messaging hyper, hyper targeted and then tell them exactly what it is I'm trying to solve for them. Because the pain points of my store owners are very different than the pain points of my agencies.
Sure.
And the pain points of Magento and the pain points of Shopify, they're somewhat similar, but at the same time, like somebody that's in there from Magento is seeing Shopify stuff right now, and that's kind of off-putting. Like, is this really for me? I mean, it's kind of a Magento thing. I don't know that I want that. Like, you should see if you're from Shopify, this is Shopify, Shopify, Shopify. That's mm-hmm. what you should see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Write Message does. So it took me forever to get it onboarded on there, but it's finally done now. Well, I should say it's finally in process now. But that is part of what that positioning entails, is making sure that you're talking to the right person at the right time with the right message.
That's a glowing endorsement, man. No, I love what Brennan is doing there.
I think actually I'm supposed to sign up, I think, for their affiliate program. So don't click on any links on my website saying powered by Write Messaging for another week so that I can get the credit for signing up for it. No, I'm kidding. I don't care.
Oh, that's great. That's great. No, I mean, it is a really good point, especially with an app that does two or three different things for different types of people. Yeah, showing the right message for the right person at the right time is really important. I think a fair number of us have like a couple of different segments that we can sell to, but it really probably goes back to the first thing, is the more we can narrow that down to one type of person, the better, because then you don't have to worry about all this stuff. But yeah, so Dave, really good article. Thank you for sending it over. I'm going to save it to Pocket to come back to and beat myself over later, because yeah, for Sales Camp, we're just missing the mark on this a little bit, and it's tough to figure out. I mean, this is stuff that you have to talk to a lot of customers, and both the ones that are successful and the ones that aren't, to say, like, why didn't you like it? You signed up for a trial and you didn't convert. What happened? And it's tough to internalize and then kind of put into action. But I think this article does a really good job of like giving us the four or five steps of like, did you have this, and do you do this, and do you do this? And if you try all those things and keep experimenting, eventually we'll get there. But yeah, that's a tough one to nail.
Agreed. And if you have any thoughts about this approach right here and what we might have missed on determining product market fit, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Send us an email, podcast@roguestartups.com. And if you're liking the show, take a minute, hit the link at the bottom here, and leave us a review in iTunes. We'd love to hear from you. Until next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.